Welcome, everybody. Thank you very much for coming out to the presentation today. We're going to talk about how MSIT has started upgrading our Configuration Manager environment using System Center Orchestrator. And we do this, in brackets, almost every month. It might be every 6 weeks or so. But essentially, I'll give you a bit of a background on how we got to this spot and in this topic. About a year ago at MMS and TechEd, we had a lot of customers coming and asking us, what are you guys doing supporting MSIT internally? What are you guys doing that's kind of cool and neat with your Configuration Manager environment? And at that point, we really didn't have any cool things that we could share. I mean, we'd done upgrades. We were at the RTM release of 2012. But we hadn't done anything new. We were still installing the product just like most of you guys would, which is walk through wizards, make sure we had some documentation that told us what settings we wanted. And so it was pretty plain and straightforward. So our manager came back and basically tasked the team and said, "Hey, guys, you got to come up with something that's cool that we can talk about the next time we go to a conference." So this is what came out of it. Essentially, we went and took a lot of the scripts that we would use as part of our normal rollouts, and we found a way to put them all together in a big giant runbook and use Orchestrator to basically automate the process for us. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So to introduce myself, my name's Mark Hurley. I'm part of the service engineering team that runs the Configuration Manager hierarchy at Microsoft globally. I work on a group with Arun here.
I'm Arun Ramakrishnan. So my team was actually responsible for upgrading the Microsoft IT platform. So we actually did the every 6 week upgrade, and this really helped us. And we'll share some details later on during this presentation on what kind of improvements we were able to achieve because of the solution.
So what our goal is, really, the objective today is not necessarily to have you guys leave the session and implement the same thing that we've done to upgrade Config Manager, but more to spark some ideas in your heads on what you might do back at your company. Things that you do day to day as system admins, that are repetitive tasks, that are boring, very standardized. These are things that lend themselves to taking advantage of possibly building out an Orchestrator workflow and doing it in an automated fashion. And we'll definitely demonstrate and talk about, we've got a lot of demo in this presentation on the actual solution that we've implemented. But the key is we want to show you how you can save, time and money, which management is always happy about if you go back to them and say, "Hey, we can do stuff faster and cleaner with less mistakes." And we'll also make sure when you guys leave, you can take away the scripts that we've developed for this process. So it'll give you kind of a kickstart when you get back to your lab. It'll give you something to start with. So how many people out there are Config Manager admins? That's a good 50% or so. So you guys know the pain point of upgrading Config Manager hierarchies like the rest of us. So this is definitely going to be useful. Who here has worked in Orchestrator before? Smaller number, but some people. What about scripting? Most admins are pretty, yeah, a lot of scripters. So Orchestrator, a lot of people haven't necessarily taken advantage of it. If you've got System Center licensing, you're licensed for it, so you can use it. It's a workflow tool. I would say at the beginning, when our team inherited that product to try and use it, there was probably only one or two people in the group that really had done anything with it before. We weren't experts. And it really only took, I would think, about a month, maybe a couple of weeks for guys to get familiar with how it works. If you can build flow charts, then you can build an Orchestrator runbook. And the key is don't start with the end goal in mind, making it super complex. Start with a small little, change the setting on a DP, something like that, and build yourself out a structure. But you'll see today the end result, which took us several months to develop, that you're going to have some really complex capabilities with the product, and it'll help you in your day-to-day job. And if you want to avoid errors or career-limiting moves, automating your day-to-day tasks is a good idea, so this helps out. So here's an overview of kind of the challenges that we saw when we decided this was what we were going to do. So we wear two hats at Microsoft. One, as we said, we deploy the config manager hierarchy and we manage it for all of Microsoft. So we have five or six primary sites.
We have six primary sites and we have 300,000 PCs that we support.
Yeah, 300,000 desktops, laptops internally that we've got to manage every time we do an upgrade. The other thing is we wear another hat. We're part of the operations and test team internally. So the team that builds the actual configuration manager product, we're part of their testing group. So we dog food the product internally on the roughly a 6-week cycle, rolling out the new builds prior to you guys getting them to RTM. So when you install 2012 RTM, we've already installed it probably 8 or 9 times minimum in the environment, end to end, full hierarchy, and not in a lab. This is real world, the production environment that we're supporting these 300,000 machines on. So you can see how painful that could be doing it on an every 6 weeks basis. One of the things we noticed is even though we had great standardization documentation, there's human error. The guys on the team, we've got a fairly big team, and one guy might be building one primary site, another guy's building another primary site, and all it takes, I'm sure a lot of you config manager admins know, you miss one checkbox and some crazy stuff can go on. So the automation would help us get by this lack of standardization control. Changing product versions, we wanted to make sure that whatever solution we developed was not version agnostic, meaning we've got builds of server, we've got builds of IIS, we've got all kinds of builds that we have to put the configuration manager builds on, and those are changing frequently as well. So we couldn't hard code this solution to be only specific to one build. So that's a key point for you guys to remember is the idea when you build these is you don't want to make your runbook to the point where it can only function on that particular set of versions of applications or products. You want to try and make it so that it's dynamic, and so that's what we've done. And as I mentioned before, we had lots of post-deployment errors that we would find maybe 1 week, 2 weeks down the road. We'd see some crazy replication problems or some DP wasn't working. And again, it was somebody forgot a security group or something else was missed, something simple. Even though it was in the document, it's so repetitive, people eventually, you just miss stuff. So this solved that problem. So let's talk about what our solution was. Cuttlefish. It's not an external name. This is an internal team name. And the way this name came about for this solution, one of our engineers loves to come up with crazy names for any project that we're working on. And so because our solution needed to be dynamic and be able to change with the environment, he decided on cuttlefish. And apparently, I can't speak to this personally because I've never seen one, but these fish apparently change the color of their skin based on their environment, and they do it quickly. So that's where they came up with cuttlefish. Outside of that, it's really just the code name for our orchestrator runbook. So you don't need to memorize it, and you don't have to call it that when you go back to your office.
But we will show how it adapts to different scenarios.
Yes, yeah, Arun will definitely give you some great demos. So the other piece we used is we already had scripts. I'm sure many of you already have scripts to do some of the stuff that you do. We didn't want to develop brand new scripts, so we reused a lot of scripts that we already had. So that kicked us off a lot faster. And that's the idea is there's no need to go back and start from scratch and build everything that new. Use stuff that you've already got. The only difference is you're not the one that's going to have to run it manually. It'll be part of the workbook. The other solution, of course, was Orchestrator, and that was our execution runbook system. And we use Virtual Machine Manager. I'm not sure how many people have seen some Microsoft IT demos earlier on, but most of our hierarchy, I would say like 99% are virtual systems. So as part of the solution, we spin up new VMs as part of building out the environment. So if we need to spin up a new DP or a new management point on the fly, instead of us having to build the server manually and then kick it off, this actually builds that out as part of the solution, which is really cool. The last two pieces, Visual Studio Team Foundation Server, that one is an internal process. We use that for our workflow tracking. So we use it for project management, tracking tickets. It's not something that you would need for this solution, but it's what we use internally already. You could use Service Manager or some other product in your company that you use to track tickets or work. So essentially the piece that this does for us is allows the person who's going to trigger off the runbook to put in a work item number from TFS, and it starts the runbook. That's how we kick stuff off. The PowerShell UI was designed because initially in early versions of this whole process, we were editing XML, and I don't know how many of you love editing XML, but most of our team don't love editing XML, and a lot of times they would accidentally delete one section of the XML file, and the whole thing wouldn't be functioning. So we had the team build a custom PowerShell UI front end that allows them to make the edits that are needed into the XML file where they can't make any mistakes and they don't have to touch the XML itself. And Arun will show you that information. So quickly, the benefits that we've got from this solution is a repeatable task list-based solution. So we know what the output's going to be each time. We set this up, we click and run, we know what's going to happen. We've used scripts that we already had, and it's standardized, meaning I know that the script that's going to run to build out a DP is the same script no matter which guy on the team is using this solution. Somebody hasn't stored some script that's like two or three versions old on their local machine, and they're missing some of the settings that we decided. So this is keeps it all standardized. And it frees us up of these manual errors. As I said, no missed checkboxes, which is great. And the one thing that our management loved, completely far up the chain, is that we saved a huge amount of man hours and the release time to get this back so that the MSIT, who's our customer, the guys with the 300,000 desktops, they weren't sitting in a down state for a week at a time waiting for us to upgrade every 6 weeks where we said, yeah, sorry, we can't push out patches today because the system's completely down. So, huge benefit. So these are going to be the three main components that make up this solution. We've got the Tasks Execution Engine Orchestrator. The input config files, these are the most complex part for you guys to get a hold of, and Arun's going to show you those. But essentially, the task list is the list of things that we want it to do. So I want you to spin up a server. I want you to install IIS. I want you to set these permissions, whatnot, make this a DP, whatever the task we want it to complete. And the config list is basically, this is what I want you to call the server, this is the user group to use, that kind of information. And then the UI and workflow, and we'll talk at the end about the big picture of how the workflow works. The UI is the PowerShell stuff that I talked about earlier. So specifically about SP1 upgrade, we've got three demos that we're going to show you. The biggest one is we're going to do an end-to-end service pack upgrade. This is basically zero-touch experience for us now. So we kick it off, and it completes. There's people that will monitor to see what's going on throughout the process, but there's no touch. Once you start the runbook, that's it. Your hierarchy will get upgraded end-to-end without you doing any other heavy lifting. The config files is the input for the runbook. As I was mentioning, the runbook takes in the task config file, and you can start and stop that at different points, which Arun will show you. It's really cool. And the build config are just parameters, just variables. So stuff that you use right now in your scripts, same kind of idea. The build config just puts the variables into your script for you. So the first scenario we want to get to fairly quickly is kicking off the site upgrade, because I think it takes about 30 minutes to do end-to-end, and we want it to finish before you guys leave. So this isn't pre-staged. This is going to run against a real live hierarchy, a CAS with a primary site. So we're going to actually upgrade from RTM to SP1. The second one is build basically a new site or role. So build a new DP. I think that's what we're showing. So we do that fairly frequently. And the last one is simple, but mistake prone, which is changing site settings. You know, maybe you want to add another product to your software update list, or you want to change the frequency of your hardware inventory or something else like that. Yeah, they're simple to go in the console. You can easily go and click it. But again, some human, it's potential that they make an error. They fat finger something or they select something that they didn't mean to. And then, you know, in a big environment, it can replicate out quickly and cause a lot of problems for you. Career limiting, as we say. So with that, if I can get the slide to advance, I'm going to pass you off to Arun.
I'm actually going to start the demo first in the interest of time, and then we'll come back and cover the slides. Slide 8. Here we go. So we're going to go through the SP1 upgrade. We have a primary site here, which is at the RTM version of Config Manager. And I'm just highlighting the version just so that you know we're not cheating you. We're not just going to upgrade this site. We're also going to do some pre-upgrade tasks and some post-upgrade tasks. As part of the pre-upgrade tasks, what we'll do is we'll create, we have the Config Manager setup logs from the pre-when we actually installed RTM. We're going to back them up. We're going to create a folder on the C drive, and we're going to back them up. And on the F drive of this server, we're going to actually create a backup folder for the database, the Config Manager site database. It would also be doing a couple of additional changes, like changing folder permissions and applying those kind of changes and enabling and disabling SQL jobs. So let me kick that off, and then we'll go into our go back to our presentation and talk about what we did in the specific scenario. So how many folks are familiar with the Orchestrator console, web console? A handful. Did I click it twice?
Yeah, it looked like it popped up twice.
Well, we'll just kick it once. I don't know how it'll behave, so.
So this is where we're saying we're taking advantage of our TFS environment to take a work item that was already pre-created and use that to trigger off our workflow. It's something that you don't have to do. But that's what we've
Yeah, that's essentially like we're using it. We're using TFS as our audit, ticketing, and peer review system. So the task config and build config file that Mark talked about, those essentially get attached to the work item. And then our runbook pulls those XML files from the work item and processes them. So let's go back to the presentation. We'll talk about. So the specific business case, I know not everybody is going to upgrade their Config Manager hierarchy every 6 weeks. That's a Microsoft IT specific scenario. But you do want to be able to get, we want you to be able to upgrade to SP1 once you're at RTM, at R2 once that releases. Once you get a CU1 or any update, cumulative update for Config Manager, having this solution gives you the ability to get to that, you know, the next version a lot faster in a repeatable process. You're not making the mistakes that we talked about. You're staying current with the latest version. I mean, how many times I'm sure you guys have been frustrated where you called up CSS or some support organization and they said, oh, the next C1 fixes that or SP1 fixes that. You should update to that.
They tell us that too. It's it's not just you guys.
So this question, if you could repeat the question, it's like what, how we're maintaining the version of
the SQL server.
The SQL server?
Yeah, from the SSCL.
So it goes through a similar process where we're upgrading our SQL servers. And we sometimes get to know at a little later date than we should be as well. When somebody, the setup fails, and we say, hey, why did this fail? And you look through the prereq log and find out that it requires a different version of SQL. So. But at most cases, we try to do a, we have a process where we try to upgrade our SQL servers on a regular basis, at least once every quarter, so they have the required hot fixes and the processes that are recommended. And going back to the benefits, I know we've been hammering this in since the beginning of this presentation, but it has really helped us from reducing our upgrade time and reduction in man hours. And also, we're able to do a lot of, we're able to script a lot of items in there which talk about the post-upgrade steps that we talk about. You don't really have your site upgraded until you validate that your site's working. And having this automated solution has helped us in not only just kicking off the site upgrade, but we're also able to run post-upgrade tasks, we're able to check if our management points are actually up or run smoke tests. And now we're not going to talk about that in this session, but we're also working on a solution where we can get kick off maybe some client-side test cases and validate that, hey, our environment's actually up, it's able to install an application and things like that.
Yeah, that's a teaser for next year.
Yeah. Right. So we kicked off the demo. Let's look at what that did.
Arun's backing up. So yeah, as Arun said, this really triggered for us internally the idea that anything's pretty much possible with Orchestrator functionality. So we're going to be taking advantage of developing a lot more automation as it relates to managing our configuration manager environment. Another item that we're working on right now, I don't know how many of you have moved on to publishing modern applications, Windows 8 internal line of business apps, but we do hundreds of them, sometimes in a month, and we're looking at developing some automation around publishing those. So completely self-service, same idea through TFS, request comes in, the app gets published, and we're completely hands-off. So look forward to maybe that for next year. Yes, question. So he asked how many man hours did it take for us to get this initial phase of upgrading Service Pack 1?
That is, are you talking about how many man hours did it take us to build the solution or man hours to implement, how long to actually upgrade the site?
No, first.
Yeah, to actually develop.
The solution, it kind of evolved, it evolved over a period of a few months. We worked through the process initially and then, it also, not just the solution work, we also had to build confidence in using solution. Sometimes the solution works so well that you don't trust it.
Yeah.
So we talked about the task config and the build config files. And the task config is essentially the list of scripts, a list of tasks that you want to execute against your environment. And the build config is where you would provide the variables, where the tasks need to actually execute, and what are the variable values from your script. So in the example where we're doing the SP1 site upgrade, we have a task in here which is going to back up the database. Then we have a task for backing up the config manager logs, disabling the SQL jobs, running the actual upgrade. That's going to be the big piece that takes a while. And then we have a post-upgrade task, which is going to apply share permissions. And the build config is essentially we're executing all of these steps locally on the server. So they're all going to execute on this primary site called CISM320 demo. And the list of variables that you see here are the list of variables that each of those scripts need. So if you look at the first script, which is the backup primary database, it needs a database name and a location for it to back up on. And you're essentially providing that information here, where you're providing the name of the config manager database and which location you want to back up the file to. So this is just a GUI editor that we built in-house to help us edit XMLs, because like Mark said, editing XML is not the most enjoyable job in this world. All right? So once the execution actually starts, we generate a runtime log. Our Orchestrator runbook actually generates a runtime log that we can monitor. And this will show you the progress you're making for your execution throughout your actual task. So in this case, we see that we've already finished step 1 to 3, and we're actually running the setup upgrade. So the primary site upgrade is actually in progress right now. Let's go back to the session. So the upgrade tasks that we've managed to automate. So these are, a lot of these items were actually scripts that we've had for a really long time. It's just that you had to manually execute all of them. And a little later while in the presentation, we'll actually show you the runbook that is executing these, because I know a lot of people get sometimes distracted by just seeing the XML file and the GUI editor and saying, hey, is that as simple? We'll show you what's behind. We'll show you the goat behind the shredder that's actually chewing the paper. So we've managed to automate TestDB upgrades, because you don't really, we're as scared, we don't trust our product group.
Don't let that get out.
Don't let that get out, but we're IT guys, we don't trust developers, right? So the first thing we try to do is we want to make sure that we restore our database and run a TestDB upgrade to make sure we're not going to run into any major issues in production. And we managed to automate that. We're backing up logs just so that we have a reference point if we need to reach out to the feature team at a later point saying, hey, this was bugged. This bug did not occur previously. And we've had the quality checks that we can run pre-upgrade. We can repeat them post-upgrade. We disable certain SQL jobs so that we're not causing interfering during the upgrade process. We're upgrading our, the entire hierarchy gets upgraded. So at Microsoft IT, we have, I think, one central site, about 6 primary sites right now, and I believe we have about 20 plus. Each site has about 5 MPs, and we have over 200 DPs in secondary sites.
Yeah, always growing, countless.
Yes. The MOF customizations, folks are familiar that, if you've imported MOF customizations, that they get overwritten when you upgrade your hierarchy. So that's another step that we've automated, that we're able to import back post-upgrade and get things running. And being able to do things monitoring the logs. The monitoring the logs is something we've been able to do that we can apply across. So many of these tasks are not limited just to Config Manager. Some of them we can even apply across other solutions or other applications that we're supporting.
So just to interject, on the import MOF customizations, I just want to give an example. This is something real world that just happened during our first R2 upgrade that's going on right now. So Arun and I are lucky enough that we're not back there having to suffer through any of the pain points. But something that I found out was, we actually had a process for import MOF customizations that was going out to a secure share to look for our existing MOF settings, all of our customizations, with the assumption that we were maintaining that share with the latest version of the MOF file. And of course, you make an assumption, and you know what that does. It makes you, but anyways. So what we're going to do is change the process now. We're actually going to implement new functionality into our overrunning workbook with importing MOF. We're actually going to back up the existing MOF off CAS and then import it back at a later date. So it's just kind of an example to show this is like a living process. What you build, it's supposed to be dynamic. As you find new requirements in your environment, it's very easy for you to go and make some quick tweaks that will fix any kind of pain points that you have.
So these are some of the results we've been able to achieve. Like those 3 months that we put in actually building the solution helped us in being able to upgrade this entire massive hierarchy, without any errors in a matter of 24 hours. And like I said, we were suspicious of our success at times as well, right? So I remember we had a weekend where things went off and they said, hey, it's 24 hours, the whole hierarchy is done, and we stopped everything and said, check everything again manually, because we're not sure if everything upgraded successfully. But that's the level of results we've been able to achieve thanks to this automated solution. We also do lab environments. So we build, we're able to do VM creation both in lab and production by integrating it to this solution. And it's helped us in the fact that now, earlier we used to have a siloed out process where one person would build a VM and then he would hand it off to another person who would actually, install the config manager role. And it would drag out the process and it would also delay things. But being able to use this automated solution, it's just, one person can drive it end to end saying, he's not just building a distribution point or a management point, he's building, including the VM, everything is getting done through one process.
So yeah, can you imagine like in your test environment for any product that you are responsible to send out, that you could build a runbook and essentially trigger off a net new test environment in less than a day, test it, shut it down, spin up a net new one, test something else? I mean, that's an awesome capability because manual is so painful.
And we're going to show another demo later on where about adding an additional role. This is a very common scenario for us. So we also support Microsoft retail stores, and every time a new store comes on, we have to build a new DP. So being able to automate that process, it's essentially all automated through our orchestrator solution, where we're just installing the DP role, adding it to a DP group, and the packages automatically get targeted to it. And not just a single role, we're able to even do like environments. We've expanded this solution so that we can build if we wanted to test something, we can build a custom domain controller and like an entire config manager hierarchy. That whole process used to take, 15 to 20 hours. So we have a team in India, there used to be a lot of shift handoffs, this person has to hand off and he has to communicate clearly to what step he got done. But by being able to use this automated solution, 4 to 6 hours, the whole process, the whole environment is built and we can use it.
Hello.
Those are some added sound effects. Drum rolls.
If the train comes through the wall, we better run. Yeah.
I'm going to actually log into the orchestrator server and show you the orchestrator runbook. So what I showed you from the orchestrator web console was pretty simple. I just gave you a work item ID and everything kicked off. But what's really happening in the background? The background, we're getting the TFS. We have these multiple runbooks. We have the main runbook is called Start Cuttlefish, where it's getting the TFS ID. And it goes through a process where it validates this is a valid TFS work item. The TFS work item is in a correct state. It validates the XML files that are attached to the work item to make sure it matches up the schema. All gets the list of all the process and steps that need to be performed. And then it initializes a sub-workflow. So we have sub-workflows for calling, initialize, which is the different processes that need to be performed based on each type. Let me see if I can actually expand this a little so it's easier to see. There we go. So we have we have specific sub-items. Depending on the input in the task config, we have specific sub-items or actions that our runbook performs for VMs. It could be just for making a certain process changes on a VM, a building a VM, where we have the pre-baked VM templates based on SEVMM already created, and we're just kicking them off. And we also have, this one's just writing a log for, and it's the update work item runbook over here. All it does is it's make sure that the logging information is also updated in the TFS work item. It's not just writing on a log file somewhere on a share. So later on, if we want to audit something, we can use our TFS system as an audit. So if folks, if there's like any compliance requirement, then this is one thing you could potentially consider, either through SharePoint or Service Manager, this could be easily implemented, where you're logging what each work item is performing, what each change is performing. The build CM item that we talked about is pretty much doing the same thing that we where it's doing specific items that are related to the config manager stuff. It happens in the process work item. In the process stage, it's doing like the execution and the copy stuff. So the copy stuff is, we have, if you notice in our Cuttlefish UI, there is a server name. This is actually the run as server or run from server where all the tasks will be executed to. So in the copy script stage, what it's doing is essentially copying all those tasks. It's creating a temp folder on the target server, and it's going to copy all the files over, and it's actually going to kick off the execution locally from the server. And there are some other sub-runbooks that...
One of the key things to know, especially if you're not familiar with the way Orchestrator works, the idea is designing these individual pieces, they're reusable containers. So it's not specific, the process runbook is not specific to a single process. It's reused by different processes. That's the idea when you think about going back to your lab and building these out. That's why it's easier to kind of start small and work your way up to building something that's very complex. But when you do build a runbook, you try and build your workflows where you can reuse the same thing. So if you need a log creation or a log write piece for your workflow, you build that so that it's reusable over and over again throughout not only this runbook, but possibly other runbooks that you built.
And part of the idea for us building this out was trying to make this as generic as possible so that we could provide different set of inputs in our, like, you know, task and build, and like for performing different tasks, and they would all get executed from the same set of runbooks. Because we didn't want to be editing our runbook every time. We just wanted to be editing the scripts, the external scripts, or the task list or the build list that we provided as an input to this runbook. So let's go on to the next session, which is the, we talked about the scenario where, you know, we're doing this all the time. I'm sure it's a very common scenario where you're expanding or your company's expanding and you want to build a new distribution point or a new management point. And having this automated really helped us in saying, you know, you can do these multiple configuration steps. At the same time, we've significantly cut down on the time we're spending on it and the number of errors. Because we've had, we've had issues where when we were doing it manually, like simple configuration changes such as IIS settings were sometimes getting messed up because somebody didn't follow the process. Or people, you know, once they start doing it so often, there's complacency sometimes sets in and people miss the most common steps. So having this really helped us by having that, you know, you can do a prerequisite check, you can actually do the installation, and you can also have the validation, everything done through the same module. So let's go through the next, next demo.
Is everybody able to still follow along of the overall idea of what we're trying to show you? If anybody has any questions, feel free to jump in.
Go ahead. You can so a target server is just where you want to execute the certain steps. So you can run it on any server you want. There may be some prerequisites that you would have to make on your server in order for the runbook to execute. Like you might have to give account certain permissions. You might have to make some modifications to UAC so that your script executes. And you might have to set, like if you're using PowerShell, then you might have to, you know, set the appropriate PowerShell permission so that your scripts run without any issues. I didn't get you. Oh, you were asking, like, why can't you run the prereqs, getting Orchestrator to prep the runbook? You can, we just haven't invested time in it.
Yeah, the idea is this demo is to kind of spark your interest. Anything you can script, you can get this into an orchestrator runbook and automate it. So yeah, spinning up and making some changes to an IIS server is completely possible.
So in this example, we're just going to install the DP role and add the DP to a DP group, which will automatically get all the packages that are targeted to the DP group. In this case, if the DP group doesn't exist, it will create the DP group. So we have the site, we have a primary site, and we're going to install the DP role on it. Let me make sure there is no DP role already on it. So it says there are no DPs and no distribution point groups. So let's kick it off. By the way, how many people prefer the sliding bar over the spinning wheel? So it got kicked off. Before we look at the log, let's actually look at, say, what the XML would look like in like Notepad format. And so what happened here was our runbook went, and it will look at work item 64961. Should be already attached there. We already have the task config and the build config attached. Let's look at what the task config looks in. All right, so that's fairly simple. It gives you all the information that you have, but I personally like using the UI more to edit this information. And you have the same thing with the build config, where it's giving you the server name, which task ID, and stop ID. So one thing I do want to bring to your attention is the one advantage with our solution is sometimes you want to be able to run to, like, you know, if you have 10 steps in your entire automation process, you want to be able to say run steps 1 to 4, pause, evaluate that things have succeeded, and then move on to the next step. And that can that is fairly easy to do with our solution. Where
we've got a question in
go
the
ahead.
Back.
You can. You would have to develop it.
So we would have to develop that,
yeah,
because it's our own team. But yeah, technically it's possible, but we don't have that right now in this particular release that we've built.
There is logging in Orchestrator, so you can see, for example, it will give you, depending on where it's executing, you can see the log history, and it will give you whether something succeeded or failed, where it was executing, and stuff like that. No, the trace log that I'm showing is actually generated by our, it's a custom log that we generate as part of our execution process.
But that's the whole runbook, not each individual job.
Yes. Yes.
So, as a whole, it'll say there was an issue as opposed to...
It will fail for each. So the way we have executed is we generate a... Let me actually show the logs. So it'll be easier to explain.
You said you're actually outputting those to
the
TFS, so...
We're also writing to log, and we're also outputting to TFS. So we have kind of a dual-edge process. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we kick this off. Let's see if it ran. Step one, actually finish. So we have what we call is an org log, which is just the orchestrator log, which is just showing step one is executing, step two is executing. Then we have a debug log, which is essentially the output of each individual script. So what we're doing is if the, say, step one fail or step two fails, the entire process would fail there. It will not move on with the execution. So where I was going with my example was step 1 to 10. Let's say if step two actually failed, you had to go in and fix something manually. You can review that. You can go in and fix it. And then when you rerun the tasks, you can actually re-edit the build config to say, don't execute from step one. You can execute from step three. And that's actually fairly simple, where you could do, like, say, you know, modify a build config. Let's just show an example here. I I could just say, you know, I don't want to execute step one anymore, so steps one already succeeded, just do step two and apply the changes. Or you could, if you had multiple servers, if you wanted, say, changes to only execute on a set of one, the first server, you didn't want it to execute on the second server till you validate it. Like the SP1 upgrade scenario, you want your central site to complete first before you moved on to your primary site. You could select and say, you know, execute yes on central site. There will be another line item there with the server name of the primary site, which you would select no. So it finished on the central site, then you can go in, validate everything successful, and then go in and re-edit the build config to say, okay, now don't execute on central site, execute on primary site. So let's actually look if the DP installation finished. So DP installation is done. Let's validate that. So there's a DP group called demo created, and there's the DP role installed on the website. Let's check our demo number one while we're still at it, still running. All right, so we'll go to back to our session and talk about the next scenario. And hopefully within the next few minutes, we should see the SP1 upgrade completed.
Yeah, we were on Bourbon Street last night, so I hope we didn't get like some voodoo hex on us that that first demo isn't gonna finish in 30 minutes. So.
All right. So some of the new build tasks, we talked about the VM creation process. We're also doing things like, you know, the on the config manager side, like installing the CAS primary, but we're also being able to do some of the prerequisite steps that we talked about, right? You can do it like configuring the firewall, configuring the IIS, installing ADK, which is a prerequisite for config manager, WSUS-related activities, and even changing like boundary and boundary groups, and we'll actually show that in one of our next demos.
So I think this covers what the gentleman in the front was kind of asking is, can you set up all the prerequisite roles? So this is kind of an example of how you can take advantage of that. And you can expand this further.
So scenario three is changing a site configuration change. So how many, I think we had like more than 50 to 60% CM admins here, right?
Yeah.
And how often have folks run into issues where somebody made a mistake and your boss is yelling at you at the first thing in the morning that, hey, you've deployed, machines are rebooting, or somebody deployed the wrong setting, and it caused a whole lot of issues.
Never happens, right? Never.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've really liked with this automated solution is being able to do all these repeatable administrative tasks. They're simple, you know, check button type of tasks, but they have a high impact if somebody does them wrongly. But by being able to automate them, we're able to make sure that, you know, we're able to enforce the peer review process with TFS that we've enforced. So folks are not spending unnecessary time in the console. If there is a setting for, say, a boundary change that's going to be the same across, like, you know, each time, there's no need for an admin or an analyst to be in the console constantly. We can automate the process. They just provide the input, and it executes, and it runs. And with this, one of the cool advantages is if you have specific change windows in your company, you don't, and you have different types of changes related to Config Manager happening at the same time, you don't have to, like, you know, have one change, then next change. You could have all the changes run together at the same time as part of the same task config and build config. And we'll show you one such example. So in this next example, what I'm going to do is we'll create some client agent settings. We'll create some boundaries and boundary groups. I'll make sure, let's check the client agent settings as well.
Yeah, we were talking to a group from Macy's earlier this week at the booth, and they had mentioned they had issues when they would set up new distribution points at a new location, and somebody would miss the checkbox saying allow machines to go across to a remote location to pick up content. And something as simple as that, it's just a checkbox, but now all their machines, if the content wasn't available locally, are running across the network using up WAN bandwidth. So those kind of things, you solve that because it's no longer somebody expected to check the checkbox. You've already built the automation. You're just saying, I'm building out a new DP, and it's always going to come out the same way every time.
So we'll create another custom agent setting here, and we'll have like bits and reboot related settings set. And in the default client settings, we're going to change, we'll change the name of the company. We'll change it from Tech at Demo and call it Cuttlefish. Because I think that was the more appropriate name for, but they didn't ask for my opinion. All right. And we'll do one more thing, which is we'll change the, we'll enable another product, which is a common example as well, enabling a product in the software update point settings.
Good for CDW.
So I believe FEP 2010 shouldn't be enabled. It's not. So we'll enable that. All right, let's kick off our item.
So you'll notice for all of these demos, we're kicking off the runbook the same way. There's not different runbooks for each of these scenarios that we're doing. The only difference is the TFS work item that then has the task and build configs with the data that we want performed from the overall runbook.
And let's take a look at the task and build config as well. See what happens. So these are the different tasks that we talked about, like adding the boundaries, and also we'll also add the boundary groups as part of it. We'll create a custom agent setting, and we'll do the software update point. We're supposed to get the forefront endpoint protection enabled, and configuring the computer agent settings, the default client agent settings. And again, this is a simple enough process where we're making all the changes on the CAS. So all the variables and which task ID can be provided here. If I wanted, I could have said, and hold off on the default client agent settings, which is step number 4. I could just say, execute 1-3. So it would do the boundary addition and the custom agent settings. And after I validate that, I could go back and make that change. And if I wanted, initially, that is before the work item goes into the... The way we have things locked down is you can edit the order in the build config file once a work item is in an approved state, but you cannot edit the task config file. Because that kind of defeats the purpose of enforcing this peer review process. We want that to be in a locked state when a work item is in an approved state. So if anybody is wanting to make any changes to the task config, or edit values in the build config, not just the task ID information, start and stop ID, they're going to have to create a new work item. Let's see if the logs got generated. Right, it's executing, adding boundaries, and that was successful. So we'll wait for this, and our setup upgrade is still running. So we have 2 demos to check results on. I'll hand back to Mark, and we'll come back and check the success of the demos.
Okay. So while we're waiting for that, I'll talk about the end-to-end process. So this is for anybody who's in the management side, wondering how we kind of control things in the environment, because of course, when you talk about automation, like we said, no one necessarily trusts it because it's going off really quickly and doing all these changes. So there has to be some kind of control put into place. So how we've solved this kind of problem in our environment and it's something you can think about taking back to yours, is we initially have the requester. So that's the person who basically has the request to do something. It may be somebody on our team, it may be our external customer, Microsoft IT, or a manager, or somebody wants a change done in the environment. So that requester goes and uses the UI and puts in the settings that they would like to implement the change. That then is sent in TFS to the next phase, which is the peer review session. So it's another admin in the team who will open the build and task config and make sure everything's set correctly, nothing's missed, nothing's that's been requested is different than what was asked for, that kind of thing. And as Arun showed you, at that point, they don't have the ability to make any changes. They only have the ability to look at what was set up. And so they're peer reviewing and making sure everything's good before it gets released. If they find something isn't copacetic and they think it needs to go back, then that's essentially what they do. They set the work item back to the queue, and the requester or a new person who will act as the requester will go in and make the modification. They don't do that. There has to be that kind of chain in order to protect ourselves from releasing something we didn't want to happen. Once it does go through the happy path and the peer reviewer has said, yeah, everything looks good, then the third person, and it doesn't actually have to be three different people, but somebody then can release it. So the peer reviewer could release it or the requester could release it. Whoever's available at the time, they basically will start the run book, just like Arun has shown you a few times, put in the TFS work item number and click run. And then you've seen the rest of the process. So that's kind of the end-to-end workflow. And it's really important to consider that as for any automation that you do. I'm sure you have similar processes anyways that you follow manually, but it's really key to make sure that the guy who's doing the peer review of what's been set up can't make changes. Because I know as admins, we tend to get kind of confident or overconfident that, oh, it's just he put the wrong letter in on the name of this server, so I'm just going to go ahead and change it. And sometimes that overconfidence leads to it deploying something that you didn't want to happen. It's much better to say, look, it failed, send it back, especially when you're talking about requests for changes that are getting approved through a complete different system, and your change control board may come back and go, hey, how come you let this slip by? This wasn't approved. Somebody else made a change that they weren't supposed to. So here are the lessons learned. We've got the three pillars: people, process, and technology. We solve the technology part. I'm sure everybody in the room has the capability to go back to your environment and develop all kinds of cool stuff. Technology, that's what we all live for. People are only as good as the process that they follow. And so that tends to be the failing point, even when you develop a great automated solution. If people don't follow that process, the chain of command, it's possible that things go south. So it's key that we learn we have to keep that as a standard. Two people's eyes are going to be on anything before it gets released to our environment. Another item, and it was a good question that you had asked in the back about logging, is when we first develop script as admin, generally, we're knocking stuff out because we want to get stuff done as fast as possible. We're solving some problem. We rarely think about how do we audit this later, or 3 years from now, some new guy comes on, you've moved on to another team, and that guy inherits your scripts, and he looks at it and goes, I have no idea what this guy wrote. I mean, there's no details in it, there's no logging, so they're blindly just running a black box, or maybe they start all over from scratch and have to create their own. So a key thing is, follow some software development kind of best practices. So we inherited these ideas from our dev teams that we work with closely. The idea is get your script framework done up in some form of a functional spec. So don't, you know, as difficult as it may be to sit back and start with writing a document, and IT guys hate writing documentation. If anyone here loves writing documentation, let me know after, because we've got space for you, because Arun and I don't like writing it. But functional spec is basically the idea of a flow chart and all the steps that your script is going to do, both the happy path and the negative path if something happens, and put in logging. Put in as much logging as you can to let someone else who may come along after the fact find out what's going on. If your script failed, if something failed during the process, you can look back and understand where the failure happened and know in the script what you have to go in and maybe modify. And of course, Arun's going to show you something. The last one, test thoroughly before implementing anything in production.
Don't be that guy.
So the scripts that we provide you at the end of the session, don't take these back and just start blindly running them in your environment. You've got to make sure that they're working for what you guys have in your space. So it's always good, test. Don't test in production, test in a lab. We suggest that anything you're going to use, rebuild it for your production environment. Feel free to use these scripts in the lab, but I wouldn't recommend going straight to production and start to use our scripts to build out your distribution points or your management points.
We actually finished both demos, so we'll just make sure that everything's kosher. So first thing was the, let's go through the last demo, which was we're going to create some client agent settings, we're going to create some boundaries and boundary groups, and also enable FEP. So we created two new boundaries, AD site and cuttlefish demo, and we added them to boundary groups, defined them as fast and slow. For client settings, we created this new demo client setting. And we were supposed to edit the company name in the default client settings, which is done. And let's check if Forefront got enabled. There we go. Forefront's enabled. All right. Now, our first demo, let's see the success of that one.
This is the big one.
That's the big one. So we talked about creating a backup folder and backing up the database. That's done. And we talked about creating a backup for the logs. So that's done. But all of this doesn't matter if your config manager site doesn't upgrade. So let's check if that got upgraded. All right.
SP1.
Back to session.
So we'll just finish off here, and then we can take some questions. Here's the resources that we're going to make available to you guys. This is a SkyDrive share that was set up back from MMS. So all the scripts are out there and available to you. They've been separated by the different areas and functionality. This will be in the slide deck, so you can photograph it, but you can go and download it. And all the talking, if you like listening to Arun and I talk, you can re-listen to the presentation. One thing to note in our scripts, they were developed back pre-RTM. That's when we started designing these. So there's a lot of coding, excess amount of coding, I would say, in those scripts that is not necessarily needed any longer, because with the SP1 release, they released over 400 commandlets that do a lot of the actions that we had to custom code at the time because these weren't available. So again, these scripts will still function, but you may find, if you go and download the SDK for SP1, there's a lot of cool PowerShell commandlets that are created for you. Shrink up your scripts, do it a lot cleaner than
so
necessarily.
They're actually available, so if you have the Config Manager site installed, it comes with it. It's just it's an add-on in the console. The only caveat that folks should be aware of is the SP1 commandlets run only on the x86 version of PowerShell.
And the last link there is for some cool toolkit functionality with SP1, something that we use fairly regularly for the Microsoft retail stores and the like. When we're spinning up a new DP, there's a content library transfer. So instead of us having to go in and set up all of the packages again on a new DP, there's a cool tool in there that lets you transfer all that content with a click. So hopefully we've met our session objective. Not necessarily that we've convinced you to go back and upgrade your hierarchy with our scripts, but that we've tweaked your interest and you go back and maybe start taking advantage of automation and look at getting your sites upgraded easily. And basically, you're going to save yourself time and money. Your manager is going to love you because anything that saves money, they love. And feel free to take those scripts. They're available. And I believe that we can ask if anybody needs some additional info after the session, we can take your email down. And so when we get back to campus, we can always reach out to you and give you some more details if that's required. Here's a couple of sessions that you might want to take a look at over tomorrow if you're not burnt out yet. I heard there's two cool guys doing those two sessions, and I won't mention who they are, but they're us. Here's some other sites. These are all slides that you guys have probably seen if you've been in this track because they're built in. So I'm going to click through them because the key slide at the end is that complete the evaluation for this session and enter yourself to win something. So if you use your phones, you can scan the tag and evaluate us. And we appreciate you guys spending time today to listen to our story. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we've got 9 minutes in the room. If anybody has any questions, feel free to please shoot away.
Did you implement a rollback feature if there were any problems? Or was that, have you made the backup?
Did we implement a rollback feature?
Not really for Config Manager because we used the backup copy. So if anything went wrong, we'd have to restore the backup copy. And the way Config Manager restore works is you have to use the wizard, the Config Manager wizard, setup wizard, to actually do a reset. I'm not sure if, we haven't really done a lot of testing to see if that's something that's easily automatable.
Question over there.
There is an integration pack for Config Manager, but what the IP doesn't provide you a lot to do a site of administrative tasks. It's kind of limited. And at least the version we initially looked at was fairly limited. But with the new CM PowerShell commandlets that come out of box, you can do a lot more. Because we actually invest a lot of time building stuff on WMI and registries and stuff like that, but you don't have to do that anymore. A lot of the CM PowerShell commandlets give you a lot of rich and useful functionality. So the integration pack for Orchestrator is actually not developed by the Config Manager feature team as far as I know. That's like a separate thing. But they are planning on building more commandlets or giving even more robust commandlets functionality. Yeah.
And that may be something our team internally would look at doing is as we develop more and more automation in Orchestrator, it may be something where we can create some IP packet for Config Manager stuff that we've developed and release it. But at this point, there's not a group that's officially developing them.
Yeah, there's no commitment or SLA around that.
Yeah. All right, we got another question.
Officially, no. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Unofficially, come see me afterwards.
All right. Thanks very much, guys.
Thank you.